Good evening, welcome to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. This is a news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspectives of newsmakers and experts. My name is Abraham Asari. In tonight's edition, WikiLeaks leaking and pouring out more classified information. Ghana gets her undue share. What are the lessons? Another demonstration on hardships. How does it address the concerns of Ghanaians? And the NPP in our powers region complaints. We'll look at what that is also about. This is Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Our text line for tonight is 026-441-8767. The text line again is 026-441-8767. Are you a government official, politician, or any prominent person in society? Have you interacted with any higher-ranking official of the U.S. Embassy in Ghana in recent times? Then, don't be surprised if you find all the information you divulged in the public domain. The revelation of the U.S. diplomatic cables on Ghana by whistleblowing website WikiLeaks has caused a stir among politicians. The WikiLeaks publication ranges from comments on the presidency, Ghana's political system, the oil discovery, the Kufuor administration, comments on some prominent politicians, to other issues, including corruption. It was a revelation of the Americans' perception of Ghana. While some people have rubbished WikiLeaks' revelation, there are others who perceive the publication as truthful. So what lessons can Ghana learn from the WikiLeaks leaks? Dr. Vladimir Lenchudansu is a lecturer at the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy, LESIAT, and he's joining us now. Good evening to you, Dr. Lenchudansu. We appreciate your time.
Good evening.
So, first of all, what do you make of the WikiLeaks revelation?
I don't know, but I mean different. I mean, these are issues that are normal in international relations. They are very, very normal. WikiLeaks has come in as a whistleblower kind of site, which has exacerbated the situation. But it's something which is going on, ongoing all the time. You have diplomats spying and all, sifting information from colleagues and other ordinary persons, taxi drivers everywhere, and sending them down to their government. It is up to the government's security agencies and the intelligence agencies to sift through the information and know which one to keep as something vital and those which they can downplay. So these things are already ongoing everywhere.
So is that how we should take it? Is normal diplomatic practice? So
it's a normal diplomatic practice, and these things don't hurt a nation in any way.
But doesn't it depend on the kind of information that is sent out?
Come again?
Does it not depend on the kind of information that is sent out?
Obviously, yes, because supposedly among the WikiLeaks information, there was something to show that Ghana was importing submarines. It will be of concern to the United States and concern to the neighboring countries. And among them will be innocuous things like, and Chidansu has told somebody that somebody smokes and that sort of thing. So it's like these information go and they make meaning out of whatever is there. It is the duty of a diplomat to always be sending whatever is on the table. And they will send them, be them lies or whatever it is, that a journalist has said this. It may be a lie, it may not be a lie. Let me send it. Another journalist has said this. Another diplomat has said this. Another ordinary man in the street has said this. So these things are normal. And I don't see why we are making it look as if Ghana must stop. I mean, the whole of Ghana must stop and we start producing new people in the country. I mean, I'm surprised that this one is rather creating some insecurity situations for us.
But of course, those whose names were mentioned in the release, do you not think it should be a cause for worry? Cause of worry for them?
It should be a cause for worry because President Bush was mentioned. The 1979, where the attempt to rescue the American diplomats in Tehran failed, and it was a big diplomatic blunder. America didn't stop. I mean, these things happen. Of late, we have known that CIA and M5 and others were in league with Libya. There is information that Zarkozy was himself giving money for his campaign. These things happened. And when they happen, all you have to do is to see which of the information is detrimental to you, your economy, your security, and whatnot. But for us, it is for political mark scoring. None of the issues we have mentioned so far, and I've read the whole thing, should worry Ghana so much. But we are making political capital out of the whole thing.
Well, but some have criticized our politicians and people in government for, so to speak, opening their mouths too wide. Do you not share similar view?
I share that view. As politicians, we must be very circumspect when we open our mouth. As journalists, we should be very careful when we open our mouth. We need to be truthful. We need to be transparent. We know what we are saying. And so when you open your mouth wide, and we as Ghanaians, I know, people talk big. People talk things when they don't know it. And when they know it, they bloat it. All these things we need to be very careful about. I agree. But to make this situation one of Ghana must stop. It's like moving. It's what I'm worried about. All the radio stations for the whole few days past, it's just like we're killing each other. MPP and NDC are at each other's throats. This is detrimental to you and that's detrimental to me. For me, this is not the way to go. Leave the intelligence system in Ghana to be able to sift through the information they have now and to be very careful that what we are doing to ourselves, it is still going. The WikiLeaks will just drop the information. They didn't create the information. It is the information which is going out.
But what kind of...
They have tapped.
In that sense, what kind of orientation should public officials be taking through if they're not supposed to be opening their mouths too wide?
No, not necessarily. You don't have... Public officials don't have to go through any training. By the very fact that you are a public official, you should know when to talk, what to talk, and how to say it. It's very, very important. And not only public officials. In no question, look, they can take things from taxi drivers. And some taxi drivers may be spies for diplomats. And some diplomats will be spies. You can get a Togolese diplomat who is spying on Ghana for, say, America. You can get an American diplomat who is spying for Belgium. I mean, these things are there. Not just spying, but at least eavesdropping. It's a normal thing, but Ghanaians, we are not security conscious. And therefore, we open our mouths wide and say things that we think may be, and we may be lying. I can walk to the American embassy, and if they know I'm a friend to a big shot, they will be asking me some questions. I can lie so that some $200 can be given to me. These things happen in diplomatic circles.
So then, when ministers take the oath of secrecy, what exactly are they supposed to say, and what are they not supposed to say?
Frankly speaking, the oath of secrecy is state secret. But to go and stay somewhere and say, this my counterpart smokes weed or smokes cocaine, it's not a state secret. You know, but for the American diplomat or Ghanaian diplomat or any diplomat somewhere, these issues are very important. It doesn't border on state secret, but they are very important.
Important in the sense that how is it going to help them?
It's going to help them because they are going to sift through the information. For example, let me give you an example. Supposing you have an Greek minister who has a certain thinking about his Greek policy. He is more China friendly or more Russian friendly, and therefore, if he's a potential, then Americans would want to know how he behaves, who are his friends, and whatnot. Where is he going to import XYZ from? You understand? If tractors, will he go to the Russians or will he go to Americans? And so any little information for a taxi driver or a driver who drives such a minister, that minister, he drinks, he has girlfriends, and he does this. It is a good information for the American diplomat to send home, to say that, look, this diplomat or this minister, he's a womanizer. Just let's push a girl to him who will give us more information. These things are done. They are so innocuous. They become more prominent when that thing borders on serious national security, either out there or here.
So some are arguing that we do not, as a nation, have a national philosophy on issues like this. Is that the case?
Well, what is a national philosophy? In America, look, the greatest bombshell came quite recently. What about President Bush, about Obama, about Guantanamo, about what... And then all you have to do with the national security is to change your tactics. And to play down on those things, that will bring about national non-coercion. So when it happened in America, the WikiLeaks started, America downplayed the whole thing in order not to distract the government and from the economy and from the political situation. But we are distracting ourselves rather towards chaos. That's my worry.
Dr. Njidansu, thank you very much for tonight. Have a good night. Dr. Vladimir Chindansu is a lecturer at the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy. Now let's also speak to Mr. KB Asante. He is a former diplomat. Good evening to you, Mr. Asante.
Good evening.
Well, you were a diplomat under Dr. Nkrumah's regime. Are there any diplomatic implications?
Diplomatic implications for what?
With these WikiLeaks revelations.
No, I don't. Actually, I haven't... read or followed all of it, but I don't think there was. And I think, in a large part, I agree with Dr. Vladimir Dadanso. These things go on all the time. And in fact, it is the even in Nkrumah's time, it was our job to find out what information the diplomats were after, and take as the necessary action. If they are after certain information, then you find out why, and so on. We try to identify those who talk to them, and sometimes guess what they or try to find out what they talk about. Then we have our local intelligence which does a lot of that, and the information can be useful. And we also give information, either voluntarily or sometimes it's extracted. We know that. But we do not lose any sleep because somebody has said something, a diplomat has said something about us or about the administration, which is not very pleasant. We don't.
If these revelations had come under Dr. Nkrumah, what would he have done to the ministers who have been mentioned?
He would accuse them of being indiscretion.
And
where the person gives information which is detrimental to the public interest, I think he will caution them, if not remove them, or send them to another place.
So he would have sanctioned them one way or the other somehow?
He would, if he thinks that what they said was detrimental to the national interest.
So in your view,
get to know what they say. In this particular case, it happens that the names have been revealed.
Yes.
These are the diplomats send information to their headquarters daily about all these events.
So in your view, currently, do you think that any minister who has been mentioned should be maybe queried, whether verbally
sanctioned
in a way?
In what way he was mentioned? A minister is supposed to be accessible to his own countrymen as well as to diplomats, especially in his field of competence. This is very important because we know that, as the taxi inscription says, many ministers talk what they don't know. If they kept to their areas of competence, they can do a lot of good by talking and explaining in a very relaxed way what we are after and how we are doing them, and dispel any unfounded notions on the part of our friends and detractors.
But some of those who've been mentioned have actually denied ever talking to the U.S. officials, so maybe they cannot even remember. Is it possible for U.S. embassy officials to make such mistakes and send untruth to you?
I personally think perhaps it's a convenient forgetfulness. So far as I know, diplomats do this almost immediately. I have worked in a British embassy before, and I know what happens. If you are an ordinary diplomat, it's the ambassador who sends reports and so on. But there are some in the mission whose job it is to gather that information, and they send their messages almost immediately. So there is very little room for doubt as about who told them what and what they say. And the whole idea is that headquarters should know what is being said. They collect it. Then look at other information, and they come to their decision as about what. What they are interested to know is how the government is doing, whether the government's view on particular issues and the stability of the government, and so on. And I don't think they ascribe views indiscriminately. They know if they mention a name, then it is correct. But of course, very often the names are withheld. It's only because of this new phenomenon of whatever you call it, whether the names have been
The names have been given out. But are there any lessons?
Lessons? Well, I suppose To some of us, there are no lessons. We know that diplomats talk, and that when you give information, you know that the information may be conveyed elsewhere. And the lesson is that you should, especially if you are in a responsible position, you should tell the truth all the time and refrain from disparaging remarks about your opponents, because Ghana comes first before other countries, and our relations with other countries may be marred by inadvertent remarks or unthinking remarks which may be made. The main lesson has been there all the time, not because of these leaks, that a person in a responsible position, be a civil servant, a senior civil servant or a minister, should be very careful about his pronouncements. And especially with foreigners, they should be in the public interest. Sometimes you have to explain what is happening. You may have to draw on information which is not known by many.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, sir, for your time again tonight.
Thank you.
Enjoy your night.
Thank you very much.
The KB Asante, former diplomat. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. We talk again to another KB, this time Mr. KB Kwanson, who is a former National Security Coordinator. Good evening to you, sir, Mr. Kwanson.
Good evening.
Now, so what happens to information gathered from a country, and you know, as is happening now? You can tell us what the U.S. would need these kind of information, pieces of information for?
Let me put it this way. Every government, every nation has to source intelligence, determines foreign policy, local policy, and so on. So this intelligence is normally sourced from people, what you call human intelligence or technical intelligence, information sources. One prerequisite is that the information sources should be protected, and information itself should be protected, so that the sources are not exposed. This is a fundamental prerequisite for interstate, international, and security relations.
So, in this case, I'm sorry, sir, but in this case, can Ghana take the U.S. on for letting out these, or you know, allowing these pieces of information to leak?
Ghana cannot take the U.S. on. As I heard Dr. Anthony, the normal practice. What I want to focus on as a counterintelligence officer is this. The relationship you have with a foreign country should be on trust. Information that it doesn't matter what you tell them and so on, whatever you tell them, they must ensure that the sources are protected. That is normal international practice. So there's nothing you can do if you give the information, whether intentionally or unintentionally, or whether what you are telling the person is true or not, and the person goes to concoct it in a way that it's foreign policy. But the important thing is that the intergovernment relationship, inter-security liaison services, must ensure that there's security of protection for both the sources and then the information. What I want to add is this. You see, the tendency in this country that most of our people in authority and socio-political important places often tend to overtalk in the attempt to advertise their importance or their knowledge. There's something that I've always been talking about, what we call the voluntary information. It's so easy to source information from many people in this country, particularly those who enjoy a little bit of nice dinners and nice wines and so on. So the practice will go on. They ought to be repeated reminders to everybody in authority that be careful of what you say, to whom you say, and where you say it.
So is it a Ghanaian, you know, weakness? Is it a weakness found in many Ghanaians that they are, with a little, you know, exposure, they are likely to divulge even very, very pertinent, you know, secret matters?
I cannot speak for other countries, but in my experience, most of us are prone to that disaster. We talk too much. Oftentimes, we don't intend it to do any harm. And if you like, try an experiment. Ask your friend, oh, how was the weekend? If he's not conscious of security, he will tell you everything about him that happened. I went to this party, I ate this kebab, I had the bath stomach and so on. Because this voluntary information, the person does not need to know. So we should be careful about what we tell people. Yes, you have to interact in societies, in parties and so on. But be conscious of who is asking you a question and what answer you are giving him. Most of the people who give this information are conscious that they are talking to people who have intelligence background. I don't discount the taxi drivers and the other people who are looking to it. But in my experience, most of the people, some of the very people who are conscious that they are talking to diplomats or they are talking to diplomats with intelligence background. But that precaution, that native precaution of national security is not there. And that's what I think we should be able to have on. But we can't stop this type of system. It is unfortunate that the era of ICT has brought this aspect where information that has been classified was a social or creative problem. Classified information should remain classified. But under the system now, when people have the expertise, where they can hack even into defense intelligence, that's a problem for the whole world, not only for Ghana.
But some say, you know, or some have described the present leak as unedited. Does it mean that some of the information that come out sometimes are edited?
Say again?
Some say the recent, you know, revelations are not edited. And I'm asking whether sometimes the pieces of information we receive are edited.
I can't get the question, but I happen to know that the first batch of the WikiLeaks, were sanitized. Some names were blacked out. Information which I believe the editors thought was sensitive or too damaging was blacked out. But the present one, I see that there's no attempt to black out. There's an attempt to publish the whole thing. Again, that depends upon the motivation of the person who is WikiLeaking. Is it meant to correct? Is it meant to undermine? Is it meant to warn? So on. There are many motivations for people who would like to expose classified cities of a state or any nation. That's what we ought to be thinking about.
So then,
what is the motivation?
Is Ghana also gathering, or does Ghana also gather information from other countries in the same way?
Ghana has to. There's no modern country that does not require intelligence. Even for domestic purposes, you need intelligence. You may cause information.
Did you say but Ghana has to or Ghana does?
Say again.
Are you saying Ghana has to also gather information or Ghana actually does gather information?
Ghana has to. I want to expect. I mean, you can't have a state with a foreign service, foreign agencies, ambassador, and so on, if you don't have intelligence about what is going on. And you have to seek the intelligence. You will find it all in the newspapers. Even then, in the newspapers, you have analysts who will analyze. So any modern state worth its name needs intelligence. It has to source for it.
And what help would you get from that? What are you going to gain from getting information like this?
Say again?
What, for instance, the U.S., what are they going to gain from getting the kind of pieces of information they have received from Ghanaian officials?
I can't answer for the U.S. for all those, but if you analyze the information, some of it is for, so their political education to help them to analyze the political events in the country, assess personalities, and then weigh their own options for the future. It goes on every time. They have what you call the intelligence department. Okay, let's come to this. Assuming that the U.S. is some effort of information about the life of opposition. So they would task the officers here, and the officers here will have developed sources to get information. So there is always an objective to the information being sought for the government. oftentimes it may be blanket information that we could send, but experts at the desk will sit down and analyze and determine which of this is necessary for their foreign policy or for other purposes. The practice goes on. Just that the problem now is that there is a deliberate attempt by people to leak official secrets. That, as a profession, I find it, as a professional, I find very dangerous. But then nobody is safe. Where the information gets out through some carelessness, where human factor. But where there is a definite technical expertise to expose official secrets for whatever purpose, as a professional, I found upon it.
Mr. Kwansing, we thank you very much for your time tonight and have a good night. Mr. KB Kwansing is a former National Security Coordinator. You're listening to Behind the News, and this program is live on Radio Ghana. We go Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Here are some of your text messages. This one from Francis Banakai, Wa West. The NPP members who went on demonstration today feel to understand that former President Kufuor was supposed to have employed them, but he failed, and that is why they are suffering today and not President Mills' fault. This one from Zach in Pumungu, let's forget about the so-called WikiLeaks and focus more on issues bothering our nation. Bramus and UDS, the WikiLeaks report to in a way help inform Ghanaians on who they would elect to rule them. Akutu Razak, if the MPP had put the economy in a better way, this country would have gone fine. You're listening to Behind the News, and it's live. Well, I'm sure you've heard that some MPP sympathizers today went on a demonstration in Accra, where while they were raising their concerns, the Upper West Regional Branch of the NPP held a news conference. So that was yesterday. Let's find out what their concerns were. Seth Stephen Kodjo Engmen is the NPP Regional Secretary. Let's talk to him now. Good evening to you, Stephen.
Good evening.
Can you tell us what your news conference was all about?
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak on Radio Ghana. The news conference was basically on three issues. The first one was to call the attention of the Deputy Upper West Regional Minister to a news item which was in the 17th August 2011 edition of the Daily Graphic, page 14, with the caption, efforts to increase access to health in Upper West Region, where it, the Honorable Deputy Regional Minister was reported to have stated categorically that a regional hospital has been constructed in Wa and five polyclinics also constructed in the Upper West Region with many cheap compounds in the region. The second one was to respond to the high cost of living in the Upper West Region. We are almost getting into the harvesting season in the Upper West Region, but you get into the market and you realize that the prices of basic commodities and food prices are rising, despite the fact that the government is telling the whole world that inflation is dropping, and as such, it is having a positive effect on the people of the Upper West Region. And the
you can complete that.
Yeah, and then the third one was for us to call on the president to rescind his decision to sack Professor Frimpong Boateng as the director for the National Cardio Center. We said that the singular act of sacking the Professor Frimpong Boateng is a dishonor to him, and it to deter other competent individuals who are having some special expertise who would like to come and serve this country in one way or the other.
Okay, so let's take a look at some of the things I've raised, Stephen. You mentioned the regional hospital that the deputy regional minister was reported to have said that it was it has been built. Are you saying there's nothing like that in the Upper West Region?
It's just that on radio we can't have pictures to show, but you know, before the MPP government left office, is we did a sword-cutting ceremony for the construction of the Wa Regional Hospital. Interestingly, you know, the president, vice president also came in and did a second sword-cutting. But after I speak to you now, there is nothing going on in the hospital. And the information reaching us is that the funds are not available for this construction to take place. And I think that it is important for we in the Upper West region to let our development partners and other people who are having the Upper West at heart to help us with the necessary funds. So therefore, if we go out to put such an information out, it's likely to tell our other development partners that we are okay in the region, and so therefore we will not need much help from them. But as I speak now, there is no any construction going on.
Okay, so Stephen, I'd be grateful if you could hold on a bit. Let's speak also to the Deputy Regional Minister, Mr. Cesar Kale. Good evening to you, sir. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, good morning, good evening, my brother.
But has anything happened at the regional hospital at Wa? Stephen is telling us that you went public saying that there is a regional hospital that has been built, and that is not the case.
Yeah, thank you very much, especially to CBC. I'm so much humbled by this wonderful opportunity to speak on your enviable program behind the news, and also good evening to our cherished listeners. Indeed, it is important for me to indicate that I really respect the opinion of my good friends, the MPP in the region, but I am sometimes amazed with the level of mediocrity, with the level of viciousness and pettiness, with the way they handle issues. Concerning the regional hospital, I think I've stated time and again on various fora that I've never stated anywhere that the Wa Regional Hospital has been built. Indeed, there was a media review exercise by the Ghana Health Service in the region. And my regional minister was actually invited to this occasion. He actually detailed me to go and do so. And I read a statement. I did not speak extempo. And I did not, in my statement, there was nowhere that I stated that the Wa Regional Hospital was actually completed. Indeed, when my attention was drawn to this graphic, you know, issue, I called the regional graphic reporter, Mr. George Foley, which he also acknowledged that, no, there was no such statement made. So he, in fact, just something, I asked him to do a rejoinder, which he said he did, and gave to his national headquarters, and they hadn't actually responded. Anthony Cabo came to the region recently. It made hell of noise, made so much propaganda on it. And I went on Radio Upper West to clear the air that I have never stated that. If my very good friends wanted to actually know the truth, they are aware that the graphic reporter is there in the region. They have posted for him. They are also aware that on that set program, a lot of media houses actually attended, including Joy FM, your own station, including Radio Upper West, including the other stations. If not for mischief, if not for viciousness, I think my brothers could have easily gotten the reply from that source that I never made that statement. Indeed, the Dalton Thomases and the pessimists in the region continuously say that the NDC has come to cut a sword, and yet they cannot actually even take off with the construction. And I said that is far from the truth. If anybody gets to the side, you will see that something positive is being done, poco a poco. Because as I speak today, the whole area has been called on by this iron aluminium sheet for the construction to actually take off.
But they say there are no funds for the construction. Is there money?
No, I do not believe so, because the contractors were as of last week. But as I'm speaking, I mean, I don't even know what is actually happening there. But I want to say that, you see, the construction of the regional hospital was conceptualized way back in the 1970s. A successful government came and could not start anything. As he is talking about salt cutting, not for MPP with this salt cutting syndrome, we are aware of this, because the Wa Bamboi road, salt was cut on it on two occasions before the whole construction was done. I'm not aware that they cut any salt on that plot, but we came and actually cut salt, and we have prepared the land,
and the contracts are on site and they are going ahead to construct the hospital. Indeed, I made mention that Upper West was also given 5 polyclinics, 10 times in Moria from Nkrumah's Bay. It has been something that has been so dear to our heart. And just within these 2 years, His Excellency assumed office. They have given Upper West 5 polyclinics. As I speak today, they are all in advanced stages. When you go to Cole, you go to Hens, you go to Babylon, you go to Wichau, and you also go to the other place, all the construction are in advanced stages of completion. So there's nobody who is telling lies that we are constructing a regional hospital, yet we are not doing anything. So I think my brothers should come again. They are talking about broken promises. In fact, it's always very laughable when you hear the MPP talk about broken promises. For me, I see the administration as if, like the kick of the last kick of a dying horse.
Okay, I'll come back to you, Mr. Kali. Let me just take a response from Stephen. Stephen, the regional minister is saying that he never said anywhere that the regional hospital has been completed.
Okay, you are a journalist, and you know that if an information is put out and making claims that you are the one who made that statement, I think there are avenues available for you to go out and say that you are not the one who made those statements.
To be fair to him, he tells us that he spoke to the reporter who covered the ceremony, who also told him that he had written to headquarters to correct the mistake.
Right, but as I speak now, people are still calling us all over the country, and people are still speaking to us, even outside Ghana, saying that, is that how you people are now fortunate? Your regional hospital is now complete, and there are 5 polyclinics also complete, and you are using them. This is the impression which is out there, and this information was in the Daily Graph of 17th August 2011.
So then have you...
Very clear with... And this information is not back in the Daily Graph, because if we are to wait to get any information that will tell her that, this story is not true, then it should come in the Daily Graph again. But unfortunately, this story is out there, and people embrace it, people consume it, and take it to be the truth. But there's one correction I want to make. The MPP actually was the when we were in power, were the people who went around the district assemblies in this country to mobilize the initial funding to acquire the land on which today the proposed regional hospital is supposed to be built. We went around all the district assemblies and were able to mobilize enough funding to come and pay order to compensate the land loss for it. And it was after that the then vice president came and did the sword cutting ceremony before the MPP left office in 2009. So this is the point I want to make clear that it is already we started it and we did the initial funding, we mobilized the initial funding, and we were able to do to compensate the land loss for the land. So it is our baby. It is not anything new that the NDC is bringing to the region. If it is anything at all, it is something that we started already.
Thank you very much, Stephen Kodu Mbeng, MPP Regional Secretary for Upper West. Have a good night. Deputy Regional Minister, Upper West Region, Mr. Kali, let me just have the last word from you.
Yeah, I am surprised and it's laughable that Kodu Mbeng said that the hospital construction is their daddy. If for 8 good years that you have been in office, you were not able to even clear the site. You were not able to even do anything, for people to know that you are starting any construction. We just came into office just 2 years. We have cut the sod, we have cleared the land, the contractors are covering the whole area, and they are leveling the whole place to start foundation and to start the construction. We don't actually believe in propaganda development. The NDC really believes in practical to active, development. That is why, whatever we say, if people want to always argue, we will point out that we have done this. If you come to the region, I tell you, what His Excellency Professor Mills has done within these 2 years is unprecedented. In the field of education, we have more than 320 school infrastructure being built, and about 45%, 50-something percent, completed. If you go to the area of health, as I said, 5 polyclinics, 1 midwifery has been established, 1 house has been established,
all of them are there.
Okay, sir.
The area of water. So, in fact, the NDC government, with this shorter period of time, has done what Napoleon could not do.
Mr. Kari, thank you very much.
We want to use, you know, all avenues to just ridicule the government, to make people believe, as if the government is not doing. But I can assure you that anybody who wants to come to Upper West, to come down, in fact, I'll be very happy if behind the news could one day take a tour of the various regions to see what the government is actually doing. I think it will help all of us so that we all refrain from all these unnecessary propaganda on air. Thank you very much.
We wish you all the best, Mr. Kali, and have a good night. Upper West Deputy Regional Minister, Cesar Kali. You're listening to Behind the News. This program is live on Radio Ghana and all regional FM stations of the GBC. Here are some of your text messages. This one says, the demonstration of young patriots cannot score any political point. Ghanaians are aware of the Chief Politics Umar from Yendi. NPP should not expect NDC to do in 3 years what they could not do in 8 years. Impossible, Kujueke Nsinkeku says. Demonstration by the young elephants today lacks focus, direction, timing, and was a justification of the old Derby Die song, Ali Wahab Du. And this one from AU Farouk Tamali. Thank you very much, Farouk. And thank God I'm back. Thanks so much, and you have a good night. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. And so the MPP, or the young patriots who are members of the MPP today, went on a demonstration in Accra. The demonstration they have called Ahuche demonstration. We want to speak to some of them, some of their leaders. Titus Glover is the director of operations for the young patriots. He's joined us. Good evening to you, Titus.
Good evening, sir.
If you could speak up a bit, I'd be grateful to you. How did it go today?
It went very well, by the grace of God. It was very successful. People turned out in their numbers to pour their anger to the president. I had a gentleman saying that we want to scorch political. I think that was a very unfortunate statement, because this is a party that professes itself as an a care for you government. A government or a president who says he wants to better the lives of our people. We are asking these same questions early when he was in the platform. Today, he's saying from Upper West, he should go to the market where they buy their normal wares and ask them whether the price of things that is escalating, people are affording it. Whether people have money that Mills promised to put in our pockets, that people are affording it. Because they have something they eat, they sit in their pajeros with their buses rolled up, they don't feel. When they were in opposition, what kind of thing did they say? Today, the ordinary man on the street is crying, and they are grabbing properties left, right, center. And they say, So
people, some are saying that, okay, as you're saying, when they were in opposition, what didn't they say? You're also singing the same songs. Has it ever been good for us Ghanaians? That's what they're saying.
My brother, we are talking about now. We are talking about the time. He told us he's going to perform better than MPP did. So the simple question that we are putting before the president is that, has he better the lives of the Ghanaians? Has he done that? You say you put money in our pocket. Have you been able to deliver? What are we talking about? I will say that we are seeing that when we walk on the streets, we go to the market, and things, the pressure of the government has not shut up. Is that what they are telling us? Yes, of course, because they are money now. So they wouldn't believe what we are saying.
Okay, Titus, I don't know. Are you using the speakerphone or something, the loudspeaker on your phone? Because the sound is not too good. I don't know. It sounds too shrill. Hello?
Hey,
please. Can you speak up a bit? I can't hear you. I think that we may have to call Titus back. We'll try and reach you again, Titus, but the line is on the best. Thank you very much, Titus Glover. You're listening to Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Let's take a couple of stories from Abraham Donko.
President John Evans Atamios has appointed Abdan Banabersa Yusuf as the District Chief Executive of Westman Police in the Northern Region, a statement signed by the Deputy Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, Elvis Ifeyi Ankra, says the appointment is in accordance with the Local Government Act 462 of 1993. About 250 cocoa farmers from cocoa growing areas are meeting in Accra to examine the challenges in cocoa production. The forum created a platform for the farmers to provide input for the policy decisions on how the cocoa value chain can be improved and sustained.
Thank you very much, Abraham. We've got back on the line Titus Glover, who is the Director of Operations for the Young Patriot. So, Titus, what exactly is in the petition that you attempted to present to the government today?
Basically, we looked at, we're asking the President to do four thematic points. First of all, that Ghanaians are finding unbearable, and I watch, that the cost of living has become so unbearable that Ghanaians are not crying. That the thing that he told us, that he's going to bless our life, but not yet. He's asleep, he should wake up. If he's not hearing the cry of Ghanaians, then he should really open his ears and listen to what the ordinary man on the street is talking about. The President and his government did come out and said that the shortage of the gas in Ghana is because of the commercial taxi drivers. And we don't. This is unfortunate. Your incompetence should not be passed on to the ordinary taxi driver on the street. If you have a product, if you have a commodity that is on high demand, all you need to do is buy the product and not blaming the ordinary taxi driver on the street. And again, the fact that you have not been able to supply crude to the Mau refinery, where we can have a daily production storage of gas between 100 and 320 metric tons. For 94 days, stores were stored down. It cost the nation $1 million. We are losing $1 million a day because power was not produced. And we are blaming ordinary taxi drivers. Now, is that because they said the taxi drivers are using the gas, they want to increase the price of gas to run up power with petrol. My brother, Ghanaians are struggling to come with ends. If the taxi driver, ordinary taxi driver with a fight, can have at least 10 Ghana cities at night to take care of his family, now you want to increase it to petrol. Where are you going to make the money? There are no jobs.
Okay, so Titus, were you able to present your petition to the government today?
Yes, we presented a petition. Unfortunately, the president was not available to receive a petition. He sent Lilante Vanderpoort to come and receive a petition, but we declined to give it to Lilante.
Why not?
It's not fit.
What do you mean it's not fit?
Lilante is not fit. No.
By working in the office of the president, he's the director of operations at the presidency. He did not believe that.
What operation? That's not what operation. Operation where? What operation?
Oh.
What operation of what?
Okay, hold on. Nilante is on the line now. Good evening to you. Welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
How do you feel about the refusal of the Young Patriots to give you their petition today?
Let me say, I am appalled, I am ashamed, and I am amazed at this level of disrespect, arrogance, indiscipline, rudeness, and total disregard for protocol and seniority by these people who call themselves Young Patriots. I'm totally overawed by this blatant disregard for discipline, order, and at least some level of seniority. Titus Glover, say me, I'm not fit. Look, he doesn't know me very well. Let me tell him, I'm not just somebody who was picked from the refuse dump and made and given this appointment. You should ask very well. I sat in the same classroom that people that they revere and cherish and admire, people that they call flag bearers, sat. I did same courses like them. So he cannot tell me I'm not fit. What does he mean by I'm not fit? Are you the one to decide for the president who the president should elect or assign responsibility to? The president deserves the right to apportion responsibility, assign responsibility to any appointee of his at any point in time. So you so-called Young Patriots are not the ones to determine for the president who he should mandate to receive the petition.
Okay, so a bit away from that, what does the government make of the demonstration and the issues you're talking about?
It is their legitimate right to demonstrate. They should go ahead and demonstrate. I thought the demonstration was superfluous because the issues that they raised are issues that the government has already tackled them. So if they are raising issues, I'm not disturbed, because what at all would the NDC government do that will be pleasant to the MPP? What at all? What would they do?
Well, they are demonstrating about...
Not happy, we do this, they're not happy. The most important is the Ghanaians who judge 2012.
They say economic conditions are hard. Do you not share the same view? Are conditions not hard?
Economic conditions are better than when they were in government. The conditions in Ghana today is better.
What indices? What indices are we using to come to this conclusion?
What are the indicators they use to determine that living conditions are hard now?
Such as?
What did they use to determine that living conditions are hard today or harsh today? They're talking about gas. What was the price of gas when they were in power? And what was the price of gas when they came to power? And when they were living, what was the price of gas? These politics they are playing will not help them. They played it harder in 2008. It didn't help them. And it will help them in 2012. It will not help them in 2016.
But this is... Eleni?
Yes, I'm listening.
Good. Now, in spite of that, you will not tell me that things are that good. Of course, there is some more work to be done.
Abraham, I'll be the first person to concede because I live in a very, burdened environment. I live in Accra Central. I live amongst my people. I know what their sufferings are. I know what their problems are. I will not be the one to say that everything is rosy, everything is good, everything is good for everybody. No. I know that situations could be better. But the government, the truth of the matter is that this is a government which is so responsible to the cries of the people that the government is taking steps to be able to at least ameliorate the impact of economic conditions and economic policies on the ordinary Ghanaian.
Okay, Nia, I'll come back to you.
To make sure that Ghanaians live a better life.
I'll come back to you, Nia. I just want to take something brief from Titus and I'll come back to you. So, Titus, what exactly are the indicators? What are you using to judge the hardship levels of Ghanaians today? Hello, Titus?
Yes,
hello, Titus? I'm afraid, Titus, your line is not too good. Could you please reposition yourself?
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, Titus, please go ahead and maybe you can speak up a bit or move. Yeah, but the line is still not clear. Yeah, Titus, please go ahead. Go ahead, Titus. Oh, I'm afraid maybe we'll attempt calling you back to see whether the line will be better. But, doesn't government feel uncomfortable about such agitations? You know, because election time
agitation
is...
Agitation by 250 boys and girls.
How do you know there's 250? Did you count them?
I was there. I was the one who was supposed to receive the petition. I was there.
But do the numbers matter? Even if it is one person demonstrating, that should be cause for worry.
Abraham, I'm not discounting the fact that, as I told you, it's a legitimate right to demonstrate. But demonstration by patriotic, young patriots of MPP, I'm not disturbed.
Is it because it's from the MPP?
Do you think the young patriots of MPP will ever go into the street and clap for the NDC government? And then why are they in opposition? These people have made themselves such that there is nothing that the government will do that, even if it is the best, they will criticize. They will go out there and demonstrate to make Ghanaians think that they are a better alternative. No, but the truth is that they are exposing themselves. They are making Ghanaians. Look, today I was there. They said that they will end their demonstration around 11:20. I was at the Art Center at 11:18. They were not there. I went back to the castle and came back at 12:45. They were still not there. When they started coming, you need to be there to hear some of the comments that ordinary Ghanaians were making around the place. Ordinary Ghanaians were making around the place.
Can you share some with us?
Oh.
What does that mean?
It means that what did they do in their 8 years? Why wouldn't they give the president the opportunity to do his work for 4 years at least? These are some of the comments people were making. Mobile and gas, no, a free, yeah, the China. These are the comments ordinary people around the Art Center were making.
And that tells you that Ghanaians are not truly in support of that kind of demonstration.
Understand the situation we are in. When the gas situation came, I talked to a lot of Ghanaians who were saying, look,
that we want is that, look, gas should be available. If the gas is available and you even take the subsidies and selling it at par with petrol, we don't mind. We'll get our gas to use. Our problem is that the gas is not available. They want the gas to be available.
Okay, you hold on briefly. Titus is back on the line. We've been trying to get him. His line is quite bad tonight. But Titus, can you just give us a short reaction to what Mia has been saying?
I'm saying that he has said nothing, absolutely nothing. And he cannot tell the young patriots whom we should give a petition to. He's a matter of what? Operations at the presidency. Operating what?
No, but the government can nominate whoever. The government can be... Hello, Titus.
He was telling me...
Titus.
He was telling me this afternoon that I'm disrespectful. I'm not coming with a good word. Let me tell him.
I want us to move away from the personal.
Let me deal with him.
No. You can't deal with him on air, please.
He knows. Excuse me. Young man. You called me. Okay, I'll deal with the issue.
Yes,
because he has personal personality. And we are saying that I was brought up in the good home. If he doesn't know, I was brought up in a good home. I'm not well.
If you're a brother, you don't use the words you use against me. If you're a brother in a good home, you don't use the words you use against me.
For long as, let me tell you, you don't have to.
All right, I think I should thank both of you for being with us tonight on Radio Ghana. Have a good night. You have some more time to talk at some other time. Before we take leave of you, here are some of the text messages that have come. This one from George in Bogoso. NPP did what they could do during 8 years. Let's give NDC also the same 8 years. I can't get the last word. WikiLeaks should not interfere in the internal affairs of Ghana. They should not knock people's heads together. From Andrew Mango in Boku. The NDC administration is so exciting that everybody wants to contest the parliamentary seat all over the country. NDC all the way, Abariga, Awori, Ngaru. Who are the people called the Young Patriots? Were they the people who voted for the NDC? We, the people of the NDC, appreciate what the NDC government is doing. Noah at from Obriabona. And finally, this one from Naporu. If NPP has anything good for Ghanaians, then they should keep quiet. Indeed, President Mills is a father for all. It came from Naporu in Jantong Salaga in the northern region. And that's it for tonight's edition of Behind the News. It came to you live from Broadcasting House of the GBC in Accra. Tonight, the program, as always, has been produced by Christopher Siedu, Edmond Tete, Bright Agama, and Kingsley Ovintre. Armstrong Abewono is our technical producer tonight. Abraham Bronco, our summarizer. My name is Abraham Asari. Have a good night.